That's happened twice in, what, 5 years or something?
It happens.
We're experiencing slight technical difficulties.
We'll edit it in post.
Ba-da-da!
It's the start of the election. Everyone, it caught us all off guard because it was coming any day. Anyway. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, filling in for the great Sid Dale. And I was actually kind of sad to cut off that lovely Irish singing there. I'm going to find a little bit more out about that, but that's something for another day and another show. That I have filled in for once, but I didn't talk like that because it would be... Anyway.
Yeah, we've lost all the Irish listeners anyway.
Yeah.
Open Sources is CFRU's political... discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world, and sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, and we'll have some news on that later in the show. This week, though, we're just going to be doing the news, including online harassment. Catherine McKenna has been given RCMP security due to an uptick in threats, not just on social media, but in the IRL. What do we need to do to return to some kind of normalcy and civility? And then the Manitoba election is officially out of the way, and it has ended up more or less how people thought it would. So what does that election say about Brian Pallister and his new mandate? And then finally, Donald Trump announced that he was canceling peace talks with the Taliban that most of the world had no idea were happening. And we'll look at this latest example of what we're calling Kool-Aid Man diplomacy.
Hey, Kool-Aid!
But first, the election has arrived. We are now in hour number 30 of election 43.
And we're already completely fed up. No, we're not. No, we're not.
Well, some people
are.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, again, we're in hour number 30 of the election, and already we've had three candidates been removed from the election, and not ones from the party you might expect candidates having to step down from.
No, so what have we seen so far? What?
Two NDPs and a Green.
And the Green, was that one the, or is that another person?
No, it's the one you mentioned before the...
Just heard this afternoon, wasn't really in front of the
Yeah, this is from CBC. The Green Party has turfed one of its Ontario candidates after an old social media post in which he spoke about sending a pig carcass to Muslims. Eric Schoeman, the party's candidate in Simcoe North, posted a photo of himself helping to roast a pig with the caption, "We sent the leftovers to Denmark in support of protesters of the Muhammad comic."
Oh, dear.
Very cool.
Not good.
And then the
you
two NDPs.
You know these things are going to come back and haunt you, candidates.
Yeah, scrub your social media profile. If you're running for
office. Scrape the wall. For God's sake. There's 39 days left. Get at it.
Because there was another person, Doc Lorne. It was an NDP candidate in BC. He admitted he made a flippant and aggressive comments on social media. He was the candidate for Kamloops Thompson Caribou, which is a great riding name. I wish we had that riding name. And then there was a chap from Quebec, a little bit more serious. His name is Olivier Matau. Apparently used to date posted a picture of themselves with a bruised and bloody lip. Ooh. The implication being he was involved in some kind of domestic abuse. He denies it, but he has left the race nonetheless, not wanting to make that an albatross for the party in the election.
No, so it sounds like there's been some vetting issues, and of course, I think we talk about the vetting issues in other writings. We don't really need to because the race is on. But
there will be further vetting issues in the weeks to come.
There were people that were probably should have been a shoe-in in places that didn't somehow pass the exacting standards of vetting issues, but it sounds like there's some issues with at least two parties. There'll be more. Because mm-hmm. there's like offices of people madly combing all social media to find out, what did Andrew Scheer say about abortion 20 years ago? What did Justin Trudeau do somewhere like the strip tease? But that's sort of old news now.
I mean, all that stuff about GT was kind of known at the last election.
And it didn't really matter. They still were able to come from third.
Including the fine art of throwing himself downstairs without getting hurt.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty impressive. So, yeah, they still managed to come from third and get to first place. Now, of course, the grand question is, will they be able to hold on to first place? Mm-hmm. Polls, polls, polls. Polls, schmoles, as we always say. But on this show...
I'm not sure we've always said that.
I remember saying polls, schmoles at some point, and I got it totally wrong. And I wasn't even divining from the polls. Nanos, I won't quote from his poll, but he pretty much said, or at least his group, the Nanos division, choose your poison. That's the logic of this election. It's kind of like, well, yeah, you know, we think the liberals and the conservatives are in a statistical dead heat, depending on how you crunch your statistics. And then there's going to be an exciting battle for third place in a few places.
Yeah.
So that's... I wouldn't say it's being met with indifference. CBC and others have gone whole hog. And of course we have. I wanted to play our official election music, which was the William Tell Overture, but that kind of got scrubbed due to circumstances.
We were shouted down at the press club.
That's right. How dare you? How dare you? It's an affront to everything that's
holy.
And then
they realized we weren't supposed to be there.
So I sound like William F. Buckley somehow. Listen here, you. I won't quote him. Yes. So the battle has begun in earnest. All of the leaders had their opening statements, I guess you'd say, or the kickoffs.
Yeah.
It sounds like the pundits are leaning towards, Singh is having the outrights are sort of best. It sounded like it was a bit vanilla, but yet there was no real, you know, there was no reveal of secret documents or this back and forth between, should I say, SNC-Lavalin? I don't want to say it too many times, but it did come up. So this is a context thing.
Well, it came up because apparently the RCMP had interviewed Jody Wilson-Raybould in, you know, the hours before the election was called. Although it's not like an official investigation. It's like a let's talk about this kind of thing. But I mean, if you're the Liberals and Justin Trudeau, you're probably concerned because like now that the election's here, that maybe you were hoping that this would be buried under like the day's, you know, top stories of this person was here, this person was here. But, you know, it does maybe set a concern that SNC will be a specter, and not just because Andrew Scheer is going to say those three letters as often as possible, that there's like real grist to the mill, so to speak, about that controversy. And of course, I believe Jody Wilson-Raybould's book comes out either next week or next
Ooh.
Week. So that will be a thing for at least a day.
How's that? Yeah. How's that for timing? Yeah, and this was all based on a Globe and Mail report, and it sounded like there was some spin as Scheer was delivering the barbs from in front of his brand new middle-class million-dollar airliner gleaming in the light of day. I don't know where was, you know, where that was. Hamilton is usually where they're able to do that kind of thing. Stand,
I thought it was
in
Ottawa, but I could be wrong.
They won't even know where they are within 40 days. Within 10 days, everybody's going to be just...
Yeah.
It sounds like there's been a lot of jet setting going on, except for the NDP who are currently running buses. And then at some point, I think Singh is going to take to the air. And I'm not sure about Elizabeth May. I do remember that one campaign where she was traveling by train because of carbon footprints and came to Guelph, among other places, did mm-hmm. it old whistle stop style. I don't mm-hmm. think the kids don't even know what a whistle stop is anymore. I'm fairly sure that she's probably gone airborne, but there'll probably be carbon credits or something. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
That would probably be the way to do it.
Because if you're going to try and win a bunch of ridings, you can't really do it from
well,
a train. There was a time.
Yeah, 1920. It is interesting to watch the NDP although it'd be interesting to watch the NDP too. But in this particular instance, I mean, watch the Greens, because I think they are showing the growing pains of what happens when you are a contender, and the Greens are definitely a contender this time. Whether that translates into more than three seats, I don't know. But we saw that with hiring Kinsella. We saw that with...
For the peace room.
Yeah, we saw that with Nantel this week coming out and saying, like, yo, we're got to get out of Canada fast. I mean, he's from Quebec, so think of somebody saying that with a French accent. But basically, and then Elizabeth May had to say, like, oh, no, he didn't really mean, like, separate. And then when she was showing the tape and confronted with it, she's like,
okay. She pulled her collar and went,
we're going to have a talk, I guess. But yeah, I mean, because this is the thing, is like, can the green ideals still hold up when they are in contention, when they're like this close to being able to say that they, it is a legitimate political power, not to say that it was ever an illegitimate political power, but, you know, in terms of like having sway, having influence, they have never been this close. And can you still say we're going to do politics differently when you're still, when you're playing politics as business as usual? That's going to be the big challenge for her.
Yeah, and part of the problem with that is it's great, I think, that they give their candidates and their writings and whatnot a lot of freedom, but in this game, there needs to be a whip. And I don't mean the physical whip, but the metaphoric whip of politics, where whipped votes are like, okay, you need to go this way or that way. Sometimes the whip is released, as we've seen in the UK over Brexit. But, you know, that's something that they will need to sort out depending on how many seats they get. And, of course, the strong rumor is that we're in balance of power territory. When a couple of parties, like the Conservatives and Liberals, if the polls are correct, are running neck and neck, and it's a coin toss as to who gets it, that is going to be massively significant in terms of who is going to be the king or queen maker. But mostly kings in this business. So,
but that could blow back too. You know, if we get close to election day and it is neck and neck, some people who might consider voting for Green but don't want an Andrew Scheer government might go to, you know, the Liberal in their riding. Mm-hmm. That's when strategic voting comes into play. So yes, there is a possibility of holding the balance, but at the same time, there's a possibility that the balance will be upset and people will abandon their Green dreams and just go for whoever's going to beat Scheer. And, you know, there's still a lot of weeks ahead in the campaign. And I would remind people that, you know, at this point in the 2015 campaign, although that was a longer campaign, we were all trying to get used to the idea of Prime Minister Tom Mulcair. And look what happened.
Yes, that was heavily touted. So, yeah, our the analysis and our spin on it may be totally out to lunch, but
sure.
As with anything, it's you know, redrawn differently every single time.
But the thing I will say too about Andrew Scheer is that he's able to get knocked off the ball with like alarming ease, because
it seems so. Yeah,
this morning he's at like a daycare doing like it's like I think it was about his plan to not to cut, you know, the taxes you pay on the child benefits you get and the maternity benefits you get.
Your taxes are too damn high. That's what they should call
it. But that was the point of his announcement this morning. But, you know, Carolyn Bennett posts a video of a conservative candidate in New York, the riding of York, whose name is Rachel Wilson. Of her saying, like, we need to have pro-life legislation. And so what do the media want to talk about? Let's talk about that pro-life legislation dealy from your candidate. And that's what the news bite coming out of that event is. It's not about him with this announcement. It's not about him taking shots at Trudeau, about how Trudeau's a laughingstock on the world stage, although I don't think that carries much water.
He's done the time. Like they got away with it a little bit in 2015 with that sort of like, oh, he's just not up for the job. Well, he's been doing the job for 4 years, good or bad, whatever your opinion is. So they can't say now that he's not capable, because he's proved himself fully capable.
Well, the assumption is that people around the world see Justin Trudeau the way Andrew Scheer sees Justin Trudeau. When even like the Hasan Minhaj thing, you know, Hasan Minhaj did a fairly cutting job in interviewing Trudeau. But I mean, there's still the prevalent appearance of Trudeau is overwhelmingly positive around the world, that, you know, especially standing next to certain people south of the border.
Ivanka and Melania.
Well, certainly. But yeah, he's not selling that, and it's because it's hard to sell in the first place. And yeah, we can have a laugh about like the Mr. Dress Up moments in India a couple of years ago, but I mean that was
unfair to Mr. Dress Up.
That was a couple of years ago too, and he's trying to make the case that you know Justin Trudeau didn't stand up to Donald Trump enough, and it's like, well, how would that negotiation have gone better if you had been in charge? Or if Stephen Harper had been in charge, because I think that was, you know, that was entirely up to the whims of a man who's, you know, not a details man. And that, I mean, Donald Trump, it's, you know, it,
oh yeah,
he's, it just, that, that was an impossible situation that you had to work within some very scattered shot
stuff
conditions. Yeah. And it's still not passed. There's still no USMCA in effect. The last time I checked.
No.
So
just briefly, cause we're almost out of time on this topic, two things that are very exciting. That somebody's running against Maxime Bernier.
Oh, yeah.
Maxime Bernier from the Rhinoceros Party, who I thought were gone.
Yeah.
And John Trammell, round 99. Remember we were talking about how many times?
Yes.
The 99th kick at it.
Where is he?
So he's not the only 99 from Brantford. I think it's Brantford. He's running his home riding.
Oh, is he?
So, yeah.
Oh, good for him.
So who knows where he'll run for 100.
Maybe
probably
he tried
Ottawa.
To call me earlier. Somebody from Brantford tried to call me earlier.
Ooh, John. John, if you're listening, because we know you're a big fan, give us a call. He was on the CBC, so...
Cool.
CBC have already covered it, so I guess technically we're not supposed to. But it's John Trammell. He's a very good accordion player. I'll give him that. I can give him much else, but he's a good accordion player. He was letting her rip.
Let's give him
if I had a sample, I'd play it, but we can't. It's not happening.
Okay, well, this next topic is kind of tied to the election because we're probably going to see a lot more of just the horribleness that people can do to one another, let's call it.
Oh, yeah.
So it was announced earlier this week that Catherine McKenna is receiving RCMP protection because of threats against her, not just the internet threats, the social media threats, which have been going around for some time. Climate Barbie has been a particularly popular one.
Yeah.
But it stems to things in real life, like an incident where she was coming out of a movie theater with her kids and somebody stopped, took pictures of her and said, F you, Climate Barbie, I think is the exact quote. But yeah, so that's, you know, now the Minister of the Environment, not the Minister of Justice or the Minister of Foreign Affairs.
Environment and climate change.
The Minister of the Environment has to have security.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, but here we see an example of it. I mentioned it when I was tweeting earlier about the show where the trolls come to life and they become a physical presence. And it's, unnerving the best of times, but especially when your kids are there, it's just something like, supposedly she's been called lots of things, including garbage, a traitor, people have wished her dead. And, of course, there's this sexualization of which Climate Barbie is a bit of a derivative. I remember that business with Jerry Ritz, and he resigned a couple of days later, right? I don't think it was directly related to this. Jerry Ritz from the Conservatives, who had tweeted about calling her a Climate Barbie, but it was borrowed from The Rebel.
Yeah, I think it's a retweet.
It's a retweet of The Rebel, that fine, upstanding rival publication. We'll call them.
Sure. Good save.
Yeah, exactly. I wish we had people that would send us cash like The Rebel gets cash for the purposes of maintaining the show.
But that's say no to cash.
No, that's for cash or whatever.
I like cash.
Sandwiches. Yeah, you got a cookie or something?
We'll take it. You can quote me.
But we're not that desperate, though. We've been doing this for long enough. Anyway, bit of a diversion there. But yeah, and he apologized about that. I mean, that doesn't make him any less of a moron or, sorry, moronic in his behavior. let me correct that for the record. But Scheer never really denounced that comment, right? Scheer never came out and said, no, you shouldn't really say that, because Scheer loves, or, you know, not loves The Rebel, but he has a relationship with them, for sure.
The campaign manager certainly does.
Well, see, so there's a connection there, so I don't think they want to, cut that tie off necessarily. It's just, there's something about climate change is a topic in particular, but climate change, and I would say it's the same with the men's rights types, or whatever, there's this certain rabid, they go to this place, and it tends to dwell in misogyny, for sure, where there's this, I mean, whatever your opinion on the climate, whatever, right? There is fact. If you have some opinion that, you know, doesn't back up fact, well, bless you or whatever, but to go on this tear, like, I liked it better when conspiracy people were just sort of like, dwelling in conspiracy land with the string and then the bulletin board,
conspiracy
right?
Conspiracy land.
Yeah, but now it's like you feel empowered somehow because of the internet and all this crap that you've read that is patently false, that you can go after, you know, somebody obviously qualified, intelligent, knows the, like, it, by bringing it down to this level where it's like, well, she's this woman that looks like Barbie and that's why she's wrong about climate change. It's just patently ridiculous. But this is the world now, right? And when it translates into real life, this is when it gets scary because, you know, when...
Actually, I mean, Catherine McKenna did an interview with the CBC where she was, like, talking about some of this stuff. Like, how somebody, like, sent her a note that said TikTok climate Barbie. And she's like, well, what does that mean? It's like they're counting down to, like, killing me? Or, like, what is that? You know, it's... It starts so innocuously, too, because you can, like, oh, climate Barbie, oh, that's kind of a joke, haha. But there are people who take it to the next level, who use it as, who see it as an opportunity to smear. And it's also, you know, based in this idea of, you know, this almost Asian idea of Barbie as an airhead, as, you know, vapid and consumeristic, materialistic, as if she's, like, the sex symbol quality of Barbie and, you know, the her physical attributes and all that. Discounting, you know, the fact that Mattel, the owners of Barbie, have done a lot to try and rectify that in the last several years, that image of Barbie. So it's just like this really basic misogynist attack that you are an airhead, and because you're the environment minister, we're going to call you climate Barbie. And what starts as a joke becomes something that's like fairly dangerous. And you can see that too. I found this from last year. The CBC did an A-tip on threats to the Notley government in Alberta. Mm. And somebody took out an insurance policy with a funeral home for Rachel Notley.
Whoa.
So Rachel Notley gets this note that says, like, oh, you have this funeral policy at such and such funeral parlor. And I'm sure... the person who did that is someone who uses the term libtard rather frequently. But, you know, if you're Rachel Notley and you get a letter from a funeral home saying, hey, we have this great funeral package for you. It's all paid for. So, like, when you die, you know, what are you supposed to think? To someone, that might have been a funny joke. But, you know, to the recipient, nothing funny about that because you have no idea the intentions of this person who went to the trouble of getting you a funeral package.
Yeah, and I didn't know that one, but that is absolutely, that's super creepy, right?
Yeah.
That is just, but so what is it then? And obviously we're not psychologists who are going to break this apart, but if it was a guy, I mean, right. You know, people say things, Trudeau's kind of experienced the same thing too. I've mentioned it before about that, I saw that hoodie with the noose on the back, like, yeah. Or you're next or whatever.
Yeah.
So there seems to be this... I don't call it a death cult, but it's like they rather than just wanting to unelect these people, they want them dead or something. And it's, you're not living in the realm of reality. You've gone to this, it's a dark place. So what's fueling it? We said social media. It's not, social media is just strictly responsible for it. But when you do climb into that silo or 4chan or wherever you dwell, and it doesn't agree with your opinion, then you go to this place. But there was something happened this week that I think is kind of related to this, and it was Jason Kenney going after the foreign funding, as he calls it, by the environmental groups,
right? Yeah.
And he was being called out by Amnesty International, who said, you know, this is kind of threatening and intimidating. And there was I watched a bit of it. It was on Twitter, like a 50-second cut of him saying, and you know what Vladimir Putin did? Well, he did this to them because that's what they deserve. And if somebody in power like Kenney, who has a lot of support in Alberta, is saying things like that along the lines of the way Trump does about certain things, and people, male, white, 20 to 60, 20 to 80,
right,
feel, who are also on and hear these things on social media, feel that they can run with that and do what they do. Now, I mean, yeah, if we were debating Kenny, we'd say, oh, that's nonsense. I'm just... or he'll go blah, 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 free speech, whatever. But that is where it goes. You've got somebody saying something that sounds innocuous enough, saying, oh, well, you know, look what Putin did and these environmentalists and foreign money and blah, blah, blah. And then it goes to the next notch, right?
Well, it was even more insidious than that. It was like he says something to the effect of, you know, Greenpeace was demonstrating in Moscow, and then Putin sends them to a prison camp in Siberia. Yeah. Did they ever come back? Now, I'm not saying we should do that, but you can get some pretty good ideas from Putin. Yeah.
Or it's like Bernier with Greta Thunberg, right? The same thing. Like he's like beating on her on Twitter, and she's a kid, and it's like
16-year-old kid.
Yeah, she's a girl. This is the thing.
I mean,
too.
He's not she's been attacked for her Asperger's, which is
We called her, and this happened with McKenna as well. Mentally, they use this phrase "mentally unstable,"
right?
And Trump uses it too. So Trump, Bernie, they're all like, "That person is mentally unstable." It's like.
We can, and you're right. We could put the blame on social media and the anonymity that social media affords.
Yeah.
But we are seeing that transfer to real life in a way now where people can feel comfortable enough to wear the news hoodie or whatever. And I would say it's even like not as insidious as that. You know, it goes right down. And Laura Stone posted this video of this like interview she did with someone wearing a Make Trudeau a Drama Teacher Again hat. It's not even about, like, for some strange reasons, there's a group of people who think that's demeaning that, you know, and Bill Hewlett pointed this out on my Twitter feed that, like, being a substitute drama teacher was, like, one of the classes Trudeau did, like, maybe occasionally. He was more of a French and a math teacher.
But that doesn't seem so bad. Like,
no, but I mean, yeah, it's.
Let's send him back to his old job, isn't, you know. Funeral parlor coupon.
What would you say about Andrew Scheer? It's like, let's make him a 25-year-old MP
again. Yeah.
You know, what's the difference between, you know, working as a professional teacher and working as a professional politician? You know, it used to be you were a conservative. That's something you would not want to be. But having said that...
Well, they hate teachers, but I mean... Yeah,
but I mean, this is it. It's like... It's not so much that we want to defeat you or that we think we have better ideas than you. We have to demean you. We have to undermine you. And we've seen this with Kathleen Wynne. We've seen this with Rachel Notley. We've seen this with Trudeau. You know,
it's cheap. It's quick. It's cheap, dirty.
Yeah.
It's easy.
It's
There's
cheap.
No nuance.
It's
you can
so
just
cheap.
Say it's cheap, cheap shots. You don't have to have... There's no dialogue anymore. I joked about William F. Buckley there, but, you know, that kind of thing, the left and the right sitting down, like, that just doesn't exist anymore. Because I don't think people have the attention spans or anything. It's just like, these short, sharp things, you say, yeah, Colin Barbie, right? It's like...
Well, we will see, won't we?
It's just getting worse.
I mean, in our studio.
Because we do... We are one of few.
Right.
We're definitely the only game in this town who sit down and do a long form, and then you do it further with your blog.
Yeah.
And what you do, but it's not to toot our own horn, but
no one else will. Might as well.
No, but we do it, and it's a little bit old school, and most people commit to it. We hope that all people would, but you know, longer dialogue is really important.
If we lose
that, and we are very rapidly. Losing that with exactly what we were talking about, both the sort of superficial stuff and the deeply frightening stuff, then we're done for. I mean, politically done for, socially done for. Put down the damn phone and listen to Open Sources every Thursday at 5 o'clock here on CFRU 93.3.
Of course, as we speak, Rand Paul and Liz Cheney are duking it out on Twitter, so it's not just a left-right
thing.
No,
you're a goof.
It's sometimes a right-right thing. We're going to take a quick break and then come back and talk about the Manitoba election and our old friend, Dumpy Don. What were we supposed to be saying about getting the discourse up? Donald Trump. U.S. President Donald Trump. Sorry. Anyway, you're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Guelph's own Minotaurs. They're playing the Guelph Jazz Festival, as was mentioned in that ad, is coming this weekend. Have I got that right?
Mm-hmm.
I do have that right. I don't know why I'm ahead behind this whole month. Oh, my goodness. Saturday, September 14th at 9:30 Market Square, so right downtown, and it's free. So if you want a jazzy good time in the downtown, go check that out, because Minotaurs are like a must-see, I would say. So, and the fact that it's free does not hurt either. So check it out.
Yeah, no, it's a good time. It's hard to believe September is like this weekend, September will be half over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. September is always, people know I work on campus. It is absolutely wild. 25,000 people come back.
Wild stuff.
Absolutely crazy, man.
So speaking of crazy, there was the provincial election, the year early provincial election in Manitoba. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the Brian Pallister Progressive Conservatives were reelected. Not with as many seats as last time, but still an impressive showing, 36 out of 57 seats. The NDP had 18, the Liberals had 3, so they lose official party status again. Official party status in Manitoba is 4. So that's your 57 seats in Manitoba. Nothing has changed, except, one thing is, it'll be interesting to see, because one of the things that has been noted is the unusually low voter turnout for this election.
It was like 55 or something?
Yeah. It was 55.4, down from 57% in 2016. Not like it wasn't that big of a difference.
So is that everybody saying, we know who's going to win?
I mean, it could be like a statement of disinterest, but I mean, I do wonder what the bearing might be on the federal race that, it's the point was made in a lot of these op-eds I've been reading that, nobody was really sure what the election was about other than we called an election a year early and we called it in August. And so
I heard one was about Pallister's retirement,
mm-hmm.
like just timing wise. So he can, I guess, head down to Costa Rica early or something.
Mm.
Because he spends a lot of time down there, as he was taken to task on, I think at his compound or whatever, he's known as the Tall Gringo. This is how much exciting stuff I found out about the Manitoba election, because it's like, okay, what is it about? And you're right. It's like, well, there was something about safety in Winnipeg and jobs. And every election is about jobs. So you can't say, this was the jobs election. It's just whatever. So it is interesting that they were down 4 seats. There was some, when the Greens' hopes were dashed, I think there was one riding where they thought they were going to take it, but Wolseley, I think it was. So the person that ran was 1,000 votes back in second place. So the Green inroads did not happen. I guess there's always 4 or 5, or depending when they call the election, years from now, they may have some.
Well, we're talking about an entirely different space. I think, I think when you're talking about the Green influence, I mean, you're seeing it definitely on the East Coast, New Brunswick and
the West
PEI.
Coast.
And I was going to get there.
Sorry.
On the West Coast.
Shout out to the East Coast. Shout out to the West Coast.
But that could also be because, people are particularly concerned about the effects of climate change there, seeing as they live on the coast. So it's not maybe not that surprising. I think it's a bit surprising that I think one of the under sort of reported things is that the NDP jumped up 6 seats, which is more than what the PCs lost and more than what the Liberals lost. Not enough to like they have exactly half the seats as the PCs, but it is interesting to note that maybe there was some kind of homecoming for the NDP. Which is interesting. It's just but 3 years ago, after a 16-year dynasty was deposed by Pallister, that at least some people were maybe roughed up by some of the austerity that Pallister has been doing, even if people didn't necessarily see a different way under Wapkinew.
Definitely, and there are a lot of ridings out there that it sounds like there's slim margins and tend to go back and forth between Conservatives and NDP. So there's some of that happening. It seems the change was in the south of Winnipeg, And it's really interesting the way that the CBC presented their election map, and I hope they do more of this. They used a cartogram. So have you seen this, where you look at it, and rather than just the swaths of color, it's kind of writings are represented by a dot.
Yeah.
It gives you a different perspective because you get the impression, depending on who, let's say, you know, Manitoba went blue, there'll be a massive riding. So like, half the province looks blue, but in actual fact, there's only, 50,000 people live there or whatever.
Right.
Same thing for NDP. You'll see it. I think it was Flin Flon, one of those ridings where there's this big orange blotch. But now if you represent by dots, which is sort of more like a seat, like somebody sitting in a seat, the perspective-wise, it makes more sense.
Right.
But a lot of the provinces, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta, this isn't a criticism of the Prairies at all, but it's how it works is you have the urban center and rural. And the divide is really easy to spot. It's like the cities tend to go left, whether it's the Peg or Regina or Calgary or Edmonton, as we saw in the Alberta election, where it's like Edmonton, Calgary, orange, and the rest of the province blue.
Well,
and
some parts of Calgary
some parts
orange.
Of it. But it should be pointed out that if we go by the vote, it was like 47% of the people voted PCs, 53% of the people did not vote for the PCs. So
right.
I guess you could say that about any election, but it's like, oh, it's these close ridings. And until we have electoral reform, that's probably, that's how things are going to go. But with only like just over half the province turning out, that's kind of sad.
Well, I mean, it was intentional, too.
It's, timing and...
He could have easily had called... Like, if we talked about this when it was announced.
Yeah.
That the idea behind it was they didn't want to interfere with the 150th birthday of Manitoba next year with, like, political business. Well, if that was the case, he could have easily called an election in January, February, March, April, May.
Sure.
But he waited for... the end of July, knowing that most of August, people are busy. I mean, there's vacation times, there's kids out of school, there's things people would rather be doing because it's nice weather-wise.
Yeah.
That it's this, sort of famous political calculation. No one pays attention to politics in August. And then you come back in September, the first week of September is all back to school, back to work, back to routine, and then you come to the Tuesday, and it's like, okay, well, who's running? I know who my MPP or my MLA is. Check mark.
And knowing full well that the federal election is coming because
that
it's
too.
A fixed date. And right. So I think, this is my opinion, the idea was get a conservative win. And then with a day or two, it turns out in this case, it was a day, the federal election is called. So, but of course, no one is talking about the Manitoba election,
yeah,
except for people in Manitoba and us. So, right?
Right.
But it deserves to be covered because it was an interesting, this is interesting political calculus here. The way that this was, it's almost cynical to me. Like Palliser was like,
oh, it's definitely cynical.
We got a game plan, we got jobs, we got this. Knowing they were going to, there was nothing that said that they weren't going to win and not be the government. There was no prediction that Wab Kanew was going to be the premier. You always run to win, of course, but there was no poll, there was no numbers, there was no analysis that said there is an inkling of a chance.
There was no path to victory.
So it's like, when people know it's a done deal, they just go, eh.
But I mean, Wab Kanew is also a younger guy. He's, new leader of the NDP.
And
there's a lot of building to do in terms of recognition, name recognition.
Considering some of the stuff that had come up about his past,
mm-hmm.
which he has,
he's
made
owned.
Every attempt at redemption and owned it, then, I recall seeing the sort of one thing about it this time obviously we don't live in Manitoba, but it wasn't the sort of overriding thing that it was the last time. It wasn't on the radar. So, and I guess the Manitoba results won't be on the radar. And the second we finish talking, no, I'm just kidding, but not to belabor the point too much. But,
no.
But yeah, it is. It's sort of a little echo, I think, of what we're going to see.
Yeah.
Right? It's a little sort of hint at what's to come. That's not to say that Trudeau Liberals are a done deal at all in Ottawa, but this is the taste, right? Well, this is how people are feeling. Are they feeling 55% voter turnout at the federal level? Let's hope not. Those ranges, that's like thousands and thousands of people, right?
I think there are places in this country that are going to vote conservative. Again, going back to the previous conversation, that they're just really energized against Trudeau. there's not going to be a liberal seat in Alberta at the end of this.
Oh, no. But they only have, what is it? Alberta's 14 seats? Yeah. Something like that. Maybe. I had to pull that off the top of my head. Let's go to the stats page that I created for our election. Yes, 14 allocated seats.
Well, the Liberals have three.
No, sorry,
today.
34 in Alberta, yeah. But 14 in Manitoba.
Right.
Many of which are going to go to blue.
That hasn't exactly been Liberal territory either, so
no.
It's...
We'll we just see the prairies as one big blob. No, not true. But it's like, yeah. There is a pattern out there, right?
Speaking of patterns, Donald Trump announced on Saturday night via Twitter, as he sometimes does. This is right before the cat video. Anyway.
The cat?
Yeah.
Isn't everything a cat video on Twitter?
Pretty much. No, it's he announced that he was canceling negotiations with the Taliban at Camp David this week. Which caught everybody surprise, because nobody knew this was happening.
Cancel the secret talks.
He blamed it on the death of an American service member in Afghanistan. There have been, I think, 15 service members killed so far this year. It's been the worst year for military deaths for American forces in quite a few years. But a lot of people are putting the blame on friction in the foreign affairs management of the Trump White House. This was sort of confirmed when it was announced on, I want to say, Tuesday, that John Bolton was fired and or resigned, depending on who you believe, as the National Security Advisor. The breaking news today is that apparently Trump is considering making Mike Pompeo the current Secretary of State. Also, he will carry the National Security Advisor tag at the same time. So that would be interesting. It would be the first time someone in the American government has done that since Henry Kissinger. Usually they are two different and separate roles, but that would be a lot to put on Pompeo.
There's an interesting character, Henry Kissinger. But
yeah.
Yeah, Pompeo, when asked at the press conference, it was supposed to have been some kind of conference with Pompeo and John Bolton, and they said, "Are you surprised?" And he said, "I'm never surprised."
And then he kind of laughed about it.
Yeah,
like...
but it came out, but then it's like, maybe he didn't backpedal either. So Pompeo seems to be in pretty tight with Trump. But as we know, with the amount of dismissals that have happened, that lots of people aren't. And he was let go via Twitter, right? Bolton was sort of as Trump does.
Yeah.
Unprecedented.
Yeah.
Charles Cooperman, who is the acting deputy, was the deputy. Now he's the, he's acting.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I found out that he'd worked for Lockheed Martin and Boeing and for Ronald Reagan.
Good for him.
What should we bomb them with, Chuck? Well, I don't know. Let me talk to my friends at Lockheed Martin. So no surprise there. Somebody, tied to armaments is getting the job. And that's also how Trump and co roll. And it sounds like did you hear this was some kind of fight, like some sort of massive argument between Bolton and Trump, which led to this?
Mm-hmm.
I think Bolton and a lot of others in the government were saying, you probably really shouldn't host the Taliban at Camp David. On the week of 9/11.
Yeah.
But as we know, Trump loves talks and he loves to be able to be this seemingly gregarious guy like he did, that emergency, I'm going to be the first guy to cross into North Korea, because he loves that. I mean, regardless of what you think of Trump, he's the first president that's gone to North Korea ever. So that kind of stuff he loves because it's good TV, it's good media. But also on yesterday, on the anniversary of 9/11, what was this line? Is that he's used it before too. We're going to, if they come after us again, we're going to use power, the likes of which we have never used before.
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking nuclear power. What the hell is he talking about?
Right in the middle of a memorial service.
Yeah.
At the Pentagon too.
We've lost people. Let's go kill those people. Was he got like a death ray or something going on?
That
a transformer?
You know what? This is an aside. That wasn't even like the weirdest thing he said on Tuesday. He goes back to the White House and he's having this like gaggle in the Oval and Melania Trump's there and they're talking about like banning vaping, like banning electronic cigarettes. And he goes, I know this is a great big problem for the First Lady because she has this beautiful son and she's concerned about it. And I thought I'd heard it wrong. Because it's like...
He's your kid too?
I was like, you do realize he's your son too, right? And I got this picture in my head of Donald Trump wandering around the residence and then coming across his son Barron and going, "Hey, hey, who's this kid? Where's this kid's mom?"
Go play.
Did he realize? Does he realize that the kid that comes with his wife is his son? But leaving that aside,
First
of all, I mean, this wasn't. Unlike that North Korea thing where Donald Trump just like put it on Twitter on a whim and said, "Hey, Kim Jong Un, you want to hang out at the border crossing?"
And of course, they follow him so like to the letter.
Well,
so
there's
like,
that too.
Absolutely.
There was actual negotiations with the Taliban between the U.S. forces, the Afghan government, and the Taliban, and apparently there was an agreement in principle.
Yep.
And then Donald Trump comes into the situation. He's like, "Okay, great. We're going to have everybody come to Camp David, and you know, we're going to hash this out." Amy Klobuchar, presidential candidate, called it, U.S. diplomacy by game show. And that really does seem like what's happening here. Donald Trump has this vision of himself as like, I guess, some kind of Jimmy Carter figure, like when Jimmy Carter got peace between Israel and Egypt during a Camp David summit. That he was going to be able to do that. The problem is that Donald Trump is fundamentally incapable of that. He, in either being able to prepare for this and being able to understand the nuances of diplomacy, he just thought he was going to come in and do his Donald Trump thing, and there it goes. Even though there's complete lack of evidence that it has worked, whether it's Kim Jong-un still firing off missiles, Iran. Donald Trump says Iran's ready to come to the table. Iran says, "No, we're not." He says there's going to be a deal with China. China's like, "No, not really." So, you know, is he really of the opinion that he's this great deal maker? Because evidence.
We've read about this in Fear and other books that analyze the early year of the Trump presidency, in that there's these talks going, these talks in particular were in Doha, which is Qatar. There was nine rounds of talks. You know for sure that Trump was never at any of them, probably. But then once he gets wind of it, when the guy latches onto an idea, you know, he's like a Rottweiler with steaks, right? He's just like, he doesn't let go of it.
Yeah.
Gets his beak in there, and then it becomes all about him and all of this other stuff. So he essentially trashed them. Now, there are a lot of people within various levels, particularly in Afghanistan, that have reservations about them even talking to the Taliban, because the Taliban are bad. As all of these talks are going on, the Taliban is still bombing people. They're still terrorizing people.
They still control almost half the country.
They control more of the country than they did prior to 2001.
Yeah.
Prior to 9/11. So this, what has been gained? And that's...
Also, there are Afghan elections at the end of the month. So.
Yes, and the Taliban do not like and really don't want to deal with the current Afghan administration.
Yeah.
So part of it, it sounds like it was, okay, we'll do this deal. And part of the deal was that they were not... This is rich, that they weren't going to allow foreign terrorists on their soil. So the other groups go to Afghanistan and mobilize, and there are lots. I guess Al-Qaeda, or like Al-Qaeda was one, right? The Taliban, they probably want a monopoly on that or something. It's just weird that this is the rationale that I think the deal was they were going to get rid of a third of the American troops if the Taliban promised that they wouldn't let groups like Al-Qaeda and that hide out in Afghanistan and, you know, foment terror as the Taliban is bombing and killing people. They won't stop. They through all these talks, wouldn't stop. And in the past, what were the stats for the past 5 years? Afghan forces, not American forces, have lost 45,000 people. And I think the number was 32,000 civilians, but that number is probably higher.
Hard to quantify, too.
Yeah, because So I hate talking numbers like, well, the U.S. has only lost this many. All these losses are, you have to have the talks, but it's like you mentioned off the top there about Trump saying, the one soldier was killed. I think there was 12 people killed in that attack, of which one was an American soldier, right? So that's how Trump latches onto that. But it's, you have to have these talks, but now it sounds like they've been euchred pretty much by the man himself. As
the interesting
he does.
Point, too, and I heard Chris Hayes make this point, is that like Trump's in a unique position where it's like a Nixon goes to China moment because...
Yeah. Even though Trudeau beat him there, but yeah. Trudeau Senior.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, Donald Trump could pull out the troops. He could get a deal. He could end the war because he's always... This is why the appointment of John Bolton to begin with was interesting. John Bolton is a chicken hawk down to the bottom
King
of the shoes.
Of the hawks.
Donald Trump is a dove. And to like to his credit, he does not want war. He likes the military parades and stuff, yeah. But he doesn't want
the show.
He doesn't like the idea of actually sending people to fight and die.
Donnie Bonespurs can't
pull
the boots on.
He was against Iraq. I mean, he came up pretty hard against the Iraq War after he was for it, of course. But I mean, in terms of being like a really anti-war president, I think. Just in terms of his own personality, it works to his favor. I mean, there have been actions that the administration have done that don't necessarily say this is an anti-war administration, certainly. But I think personally, Donald Trump is very anti-war. He doesn't want to be involved in wars. So he could very easily, maybe not easily, but he is in an ideal position where, yeah, he'll take the hit politically, but he's also the head of a party that will literally do anything he says. So, yeah, you're going to have people like Rand Paul and Lindsey Graham are probably going to throw a fit, but like the vast majority of the Republican Party would back him, whatever his play is. So he's in a unique position to sort of be the one to end this war, which has been longer than the American Revolution, the Civil War, America's involvement in World Wars I and II, and the Korean War combined. So,
the state of constant war.
Right.
But yeah, it's funny though, because he seems like the kind of guy that would thrive on it, but he has said some interesting things,
yeah.
and the doves have to give him credit. He's like, you know, well, we should get out of there, because I think he looks at it from a financial perspective and he sees, you know, the millions, billions, a trillion dollars
right.
going into the U.S. military. And it's like, well, why? And then he pulls this whole, the likes of which we've never seen, we're going to come down on you. That's the dictator style talk.
Right.
A la Kim Jong-un or even Putin. So he likes the bluster, but
right.
he's not willing to...
But we also can't underestimate his desire for a Nobel Peace Prize, but that's a conversation we'll have to have for another day.
Obama got one. He didn't do anything.
Exactly.
He did nothing.
Exactly.
Zero.
So before we leave, we just want to announce what candidates we have lined up so far. We are hoping to get every single Guelph candidate into the studio.
You're all welcome.
But for right now, this is who we have lined up. So on September the 26th at 5, we have... Aisha Janjir for the NDP. On October the 3rd at 5:30, we have Mark Paralovas of the People's Party. On October 10th at 5, we have Steve Dick of the Green Party. And then at 5:30, we will have Paul Taylor of the None of the Above Party.
Doubleheader.
Oh, yeah.
Yikes.
And, well, some of these are definitely going to be double-headers because there's 5 Thursdays and 8 candidates. And then on October the 17th at 5, we will have Lloyd Longfield. Of the Liberal Party. So set your calendars thus.
We're getting there. Collect all 8.
Well, if that's the cap, but we'll see.
Oh, yeah, maybe more.
September 30th is the deadline, so for people to get in the race. So that's that. If you want to stay connected to us, go to our website at opensourcesguelph.com. Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it from our website every Monday, or at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or on your favorite podcast app at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can find my news and politics site at GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And DJ Sounds Good to Me in repeat form will be here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. We will, of course, be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more open sources, and we will see you then.